you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 248 of The Law Entrepreneur. My name is Neil Tyra. I'm your host once again today. And today my guest is Andy Nichols. Andy is an attorney in nearby Frederick, Maryland, which is kind of a small town in nature. Not really a small town, actually. It's fairly sizable, but in any case, it has that small town feel to it. Andy is a owner and partner in a firm, I would say a small firm, a couple partners, a couple associates, and a couple staff in that regard. And they do some insurance defense work, some plaintiffs work, some family law. So there's a lot of variety there. And it's an interesting discussion that we talk about the roots of the firm and how they came to be where they are today and how they've grown and what kind of marketing they've done and some of the challenges that bringing those kinds of different practice areas together entails. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation with my friend Andy Nichols. Andy Nichols, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us here today. We're recording this episode just before Thanksgiving, so we're a little bit about 6 weeks ahead of time. So wishing you and your family a happy holidays here, Andy. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure, Neil. Appreciate that. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family as well. So I'm an attorney in Frederick. I have a small firm. Maybe for Frederick, it might even be a mid-sized firm these days. But we have myself, my partner, Marshall Horman, and we have two associate attorneys. Marshall and I opened this firm back in January of 2016. We have known each other since high school. He's as close to me as my brother is. And he approached me and in 2015. I was a partner with a defense litigation firm in Baltimore City and said, hey, would you like to think about opening a practice together? I had been commuting from Frederick to Baltimore for about 9 years at that point. And ultimately, I talked it over with my wife and I said, hey, you know, the opportunity to open a practice 4 miles from home is not something that's going to just present itself on a regular basis. So I said to her, I think we need to give this a shot. And if it doesn't work out, I can always go back to Baltimore and find a job doing insurance defense work. And almost 5 years later, here we are.
Yeah. So just to give our audience a little perspective on the commute from Frederick, Maryland to Baltimore, Maryland on a good day is about what, an hour and a half?
Yeah, approximately. Yep. From where I live to downtown Baltimore, where our office was.
Yeah. It's a pretty solid packed highway and you don't have too many options. So you're kind of locked to the commute. So you're covering at a minimum of 2.5 hours a day.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, so that's always a big consideration. And now, I guess, with the pandemic, you've gone from that disastrous 4 mile commute to, you know, to the room next door.
Yeah, some days, you know, we still do keep our office open, but we do have days when I say, hey, you know what? Today is a day I'm working from home. I planned ahead. I brought work with me. You know, we have the ability. We're learning this as we go, as are a lot of attorneys and businesses, you know, just trying to figure it out as we go along. Some days are better than others with it.
So you started off doing, well, back when you were working out of Baltimore, you were doing insurance defense work, so mostly personal injury type cases. When you went out on your own, did you jump on the other side of the fence and start working plaintiff side?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Neil. I have a little bit of, our practice here in the firm involves a little bit of both. I still do a decent bit of defense work on the workers' comp side, but on the personal injury side, as you've referenced, or we call it the liability side, we do almost primarily plaintiff's work. And so all I have to do is I'm just careful to avoid any conflicts with any of my insurance clients. They all understand. And so far, it hasn't been a problem. And in a lot of ways, it's been a nice mix. You know, it gives me a little bit of a foot in both worlds. And the perspective I see from both sides of it, I think, helps make me, not to be cliche, but a better attorney. But I also understand where each client's coming from a little bit more now, and sometimes where the other side's coming from.
No, I think that's a really important consideration. And you see it in several circumstances. I think the average layperson doesn't get that. They don't understand how you can go from one day working for the insurance company to defend against a claim to the next day working for a plaintiff who is actually making a claim. It's very similar to folks who started out in the state's attorney's office prosecuting, you know, criminal cases. And then when they go out on their own, you know, switch over and start doing, you know, criminal defense work. And as you said, the ability to view a matter from both perspectives is a real advantage.
Yeah, it absolutely has been. And I think, you know, as an attorney, and you know this as well as I do, every experience you can turn into an advantage if you're willing to learn from it, and sometimes willing to admit where you've made a mistake, maybe how you approached something or handled something. So I try and be open-minded about all those experiences.
You know, I had a mentor, actually, you know, he's a relative, my wife's uncle, who was a very prominent attorney in the Montgomery County, and who counseled me quite clearly when I started my legal career. And he made the observation that, look, you don't have to work for both sides of the fence, but you have to have empathy for the other side. Mm-hmm. And the more you can put yourself in the other attorney's shoes, the better off you're going to be in terms of representing your own client. And those words stuck with me personally throughout my career as a litigator. You know, and the other thing he said, I'm getting completely off the subject here, but who cares? The other thing he said was, always conduct yourself as a gentleman, because that's the best compliment that anybody can pay you as an attorney, to think of you as a true gentleman. And that stuck with me as well. So those two tenets, think about the opposing counsel and what their perspective is, and just be a good person. And that's going to carry you a long way in the law.
That's great advice you got there. And I got similar advice as well. And it served me well so far. Absolutely.
So when you went to law school, let's go back there for a little bit. The idea of opening your own firm, was that ever part of your thinking or rationale, or did that never cross your mind?
I kind of went through a little bit of a thought process, as all law students do. You know, my freshman year, I took torts We all do. It's a fascinating thing for most of us. I have no attorneys in my family. It was my first exposure to that entire concept and those theories. And so I was all ramped up. I wanted to be a personal injury attorney. You know, that's what I wanted to do. Then my beginning or middle of my second year in law school, I went to work for an in-house insurance defense firm in Towson, Maryland, in the Baltimore area. And they were doing insurance defense work. And, you know, I loved it. And I think a lot of it was a lot of the concepts and theories in law school, just civil procedure stuff, suddenly clicked. And I understood what it meant on a tangible level versus sort of the academic and theoretical level. And then at that point, I thought, okay, I want to do insurance defense work. I want to be in a firm. I want to do this. I want to have this sort of a setting. And that was what I did for the majority of my career. And then I became a partner, which, you know, as you know, is a different process than being an associate in an attorney, rather in a law firm. And so that kind of opened my eyes to the idea of being a business owner. And there were things that my previous firm did from a business ownership standpoint that I didn't necessarily think were the best way to do things. It doesn't make me right. I just didn't necessarily agree with it. But when you're the lowest man on the totem pole as a partner in terms of ownership percentage, your voice only goes so far.
Sure. And
that was one of the things that when my current business partner, Marshall Horman, asked me about creating this firm, that did appeal to me. The idea of being the one who could make those decisions and my input carried a lot more weight than it did when you were one of five or six partners.
So what was the thought process when you opened your own practice? Were you consciously thinking about what areas of the law you would service your clients with, or was it just, let's just hop over to our own firm and start plaintiff's work? That's the easiest entree for us.
Yeah, and that's a great question, Neil, because you know there was a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I knew I had a couple of my insurance clients that would come with me. I bring that book of work with me, so I knew that was going to be enough to kind of keep the lights on, if you will.
Sure.
But I also knew that I was going to need to grow a practice. And the reality of it is, and you've touched on it, you know, the transition to plaintiff's work was going to be the most natural because it's just the other side of the same equation. And I don't mean that to simplify, because it is a completely different process than defense work. And I understand that. And I had handled some plaintiff's cases before, but that was the thought process. And, you know, we're kind of a general civil litigation practice. My partner does primarily family law. We do some estates work. And then we also do a decent bit of commercial litigation work representing local businesses. And so, you know, it was just a process of what's going to be the most immediate thing that we can do. And that was obviously my insurance work. And then the next thing I set my sights on was the personal injury side of things.
You know, while it is the same or the opposite side of the coin, the fact of the matter is it's litigating. And the central theme there is knowing the process of how a case works through the system and how you work up a case on both sides of the aisle. And that's immaterial to the actual merits of the dispute. As you said, you know, it's more of a civil procedure or a localized court procedure. And those things are, you know, I venture to say as important, some cases more important as understanding the substantive aspect of the law, because frankly, you know, you're not pushing the boundaries of the legal practice in the vast majority of your cases. They're pretty cut and dry disputes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's rare that you see something too different. You know, you understand when you get a case, whether you're on the plaintiff side or the defense side, essentially what this case is going to be about. And you just have to be able to look at it from a different perspective. And, you know, it's interesting because when I made this move, I reached out to a local plaintiff's attorney I know. And Frederick, for as much of a growing town as it is, the legal community is still pretty small, and it's a very close-knit community, and the county and the city itself are very close-knit. You know, they like local. Frederick's all about, hey, I want a local plumber, I want a local contractor, I want a local attorney. And so I met with the local plaintiff's attorney just to get his perspective. And again, this goes back to what you said, you know, your mentor told you, which was, you know, understand and be open to what you're seeing in front of you. And he said to me, listen, you're going to struggle with this for a little bit because you're still going to be looking at things from your defense attorney's perspective. And you're going to turn down cases that I would take.
Right. Yeah.
And so you've got to learn to shift the optics with which you evaluate a case. That was, you know, a very good pointer from him. And I have almost to my detriment applied that. I've taken some cases that afterwards, I'm like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have taken this case. I think I was being too open to the facts and how they could be interpreted. But that's all about that, you know,
finding that balance. Yeah. I had the same challenge, you know, because during law school, I spent most of my time in the state's attorney's office. And so that's what I thought I was going to do, is put bad guys in jail. And so your mental approach to a matter is from the perspective of the state and, you know, versus the alleged perpetrator of a crime. And then when I went to work in a personal injury firm, boutique firm downtown DC, you know, I felt like my mental process was a little more aligned with the defense side of it and questioning the claim. Maybe, as you said, to the detriment, because as your counselor was saying, your inclination is going to be to turn down some cases that I would normally take. I had to get over that hurdle, and that was a bit of a challenge to kind of reorient my thinking that way.
Yeah, absolutely has been. And you know, one of the things that I have most benefited from in this venture, you know, that's going on to its fifth year now, is the relationships I've had with other attorneys. And this is where, again, you know, the sound advice you got from your mentor and similar advice I got, I always got along really well with my opposing counsel when I was doing insurance defense work. And yeah. I can't obviously say every time, but I would say the vast majority of the time, mm-hmm. got along well with opposing counsel. It served me really well when I got out and started to do personal injury work, because I found myself calling and emailing a lot of these attorneys that I used to have cases against just to run strategies by them, run scenarios by them. Never did any single one of those attorneys say to me, I'm not going to help you. I mean, they couldn't have been more helpful and more willing to assist me with all. And I had a lot of questions, I got to tell you, and they were great about all of them.
Some of my closest friends in the legal community are attorneys that I had cases against and frequently, you know, lost to. But, you know, if you make a point of trying to be, you know, cordial and work, recognize that you're both working in the legal practice, you know, you can find that you have some great friendships that outlast a case that maybe didn't go quite your way. I'm interested to thinking about when you and your partner kind of formulated a plan to start your practice. Was he already doing family law?
He was, yeah. So he was with a firm in Frederick that was originally started by his dad and two other attorneys. And his dad had since shifted to being of counsel. He was, you know, retired from the full-time practice of law. And then the firm was then my partner and then the son of another one of the original named partners.
Right.
But there was about a 20-year age difference between Marshall and the other attorney. And at that point, they had different visions. Marshall wanted to grow the firm, do some different things. And the other attorney, who was closer to kind of the retirement age, as you can imagine, wasn't really looking to take a bunch of risks. And so Marshall already had a very established presence here in Frederick because his father had been an attorney. And then Marshall, by his own reputation through the work he had done as an attorney locally, had a very well-established practice. And he primarily did family law even then.
Well, you know, at first glance, I think, well, gee, that's kind of a odd pairing, you know, personal injury attorney and family law attorney. And then I said, what are you talking about, Neil? That's exactly what you did. I started off as personal injury and I added family. And the reason I did it was because, you know, I enjoyed being at that time in the courtroom as a litigator. And it was, you know, a way for me to add some more court cases and kind of get exposed to a new aspect of the law. So the litigation aspect of personal injury versus family is not too dissimilar. You know, you go through the same general phases. And so it's not really an odd pairing when you think about it.
No, it's not. And you know, there's a similar mindset I think you have to have as an attorney dealing with clients in family law cases and personal injury cases. And I can only say that with a certain level of knowledge, because I don't really do family law. I leave that to Marshall, but every now and then I might pinch hit on something, you know, if there's a scheduling conflict or an issue like that. But, you know, you have to be available to your clients. You know, personal injury clients have a lot of questions. And, you know, as a former personal injury attorney, you know that as well as I do. And you've got to be able to answer those questions, make time to talk to those clients. And the same or a very similar mindset seems to apply on the family law side as well. And, you know, that's where that defense attorney mindset of mine has been something I've had to be, again, open to changing, because when I did insurance defense work, at the end of the day, I needed to leave with 8 hours of billable time on my timesheet. That was my metric, knowing I'd had a productive day. And plaintiff's work took a little bit of a transition because I can't bill a client for that 45-minute conversation. You know, I know family law you do, but on the plaintiff side, you don't. And again, there was this sort of competing mindset of, well, this conversation needs to be quick because I can't bill for it.
Right.
But that's not always what was best for the client. And I had to, again, open my thinking to understand that I had to shift gears at times on how I interacted with clients.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. For many years, lawyers like you have spent thousands of dollars on marketing campaigns that generate tons of leads, but often left many of them in the dust once the campaign ended. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. Their content loop system not only nurtures all of your leads and contacts in perpetuity, but it's done by pushing out quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing efforts actually work. Spotlight Branding's content loop makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community with their content loop by producing engaging content that speaks to your client's needs and fears, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free download that explains the content loop and how you can put it into practice in your law firm's marketing strategy. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, spotlightbranding.com/TLE to get your copy. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher ROI. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. Yeah, well, those are the challenges that you face when you kind of mix those kinds of practice areas together, you know, recognizing those differences. So when you started the practice, you know, both you and your partner, you brought assets to the table and some clients, but I'm imagining that your vision for the firm at that point was sustainability and ultimate growth. So what were the driving factors and as you have proceeded here in the 5 years to get you to where you are?
You know, a lot of that, we had to look at what the marketplace was dictating we needed to do, you know, and it's an interesting perspective because the types of clients that a personal injury practice looks at and is willing to take may differ in a number of demographics from what you're looking for in a family law client or a business client. The things that personal injury client, at the end of the day, I'm looking at the facts of the case. That's all I'm particularly concerned about. I'm not worried about the client's liquidity, their ability to pay a bill, because that's not a factor, you know, because of the contingency fee system. When my partner's looking at family law clients and some of these other general civil matters we handle, that's something we have to look at. Can the client pay these for sure when we send them? And that creates kind of a little bit of a, you know, a conundrum on how you do marketing, and because you're trying to, because, you know, everything about marketing is the demographic you're trying to reach, certain right. age range, certain income brackets. And there's a completely different way that I look at things from the way Marshall looks at things. So that was a challenge, but, you know, we had to learn, okay, social media is a big thing. Online reviews are a big thing, you know, and I was listening to your podcast a couple of weeks ago that you did with Matt Trollinger, who introduced us. And that was one of the things Matt talked about. You and Matt spent some time talking about that, you know, social media aspect, the marketing aspect. And it was, you know, it was a challenge to figure that out because, and I went to the CRISP Summit last year in Atlanta. And I know you and Matt talked about that a little bit too. But as I sat there, I thought, man, attorneys, we are terrible marketers. We just don't know what we're doing, you know? And it's, and I had to sort of pull myself out of the mindset of how we used to do things because we were an insurance defense firm. We had a captive, you know, book of 40 to 50 insurance companies that were sending us work, you know, and that was based largely on relationships that the firm had had with these different companies. And you didn't have to do real marketing then. You know, real marketing then was flying out to Indiana, going to the insurance company's headquarters, bringing some goodies, taking them out to lunch. That was it. At the end of the day, they didn't care, you know, how many cases you had won, you know, what you had done in the community, you know, what was your business philosophy. They didn't care. And so that was a whole learning process for me. And so that was part of it. Networking with the local bar association here was another big part of it. Referrals from other attorneys, you know, personal injury work. I know of one attorney, and maybe I'm a half of an attorney now, I put in that category, earning their living primarily doing personal injury work here in Frederick. And so I know when I get calls from friends or family, it's usually about a criminal question they've got, criminal law question, a family law question, or personal injury question. And so I just started to reach out to local attorneys here in the Frederick Bar and going to lunch with them and just saying, hey, if you get these cases for personal injury, let me know. I'm happy to take the referral. I'm happy to do, you know, the appropriate fee split as long as the client's on board with it. And that has actually served me pretty well in that regard, because I would have a lot of attorneys say, oh yeah, man, I get calls all the time about, you know, car accidents and stuff. I don't do it. I don't even know who to send them to.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting that you mentioned those three practice areas, personal injury, family law, and criminal defense. As you say, the need for an attorney in each of those areas is different. And so the marketing approach oftentimes is different as well. And you have to be able to figure that out. Relationship marketing for your insurance defense work, now, there's a lot of inertia in that, you know, and that's really, you're fortunate that relationships already built up. And so your task was simply to maintain those relationships and to nurture them. But it's a skill set that serves you when you then go to the bar association and start networking. Now you're doing networking as a marketing endeavor. The relationship building process in the network environment is just the same. You use those skills to now develop new relationships. So while they're different, there's some carryover.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a situation where at the end of the day, you can sit down with as many other attorneys as you want and say, hey, you know, I'd like to see if it's possible for you to refer some cases to me. But if they don't like you, it's not going to happen. You know, you can buy them all the free lunches you want. But if they just don't like you as a person, then that relationship is never going to really get off the ground in that regard.
Yeah. So as we say, it's know, like, and trust. So you got a few steps to go through before you can reap the benefits of that relationship marketing. So let's circle back then to your social media and other online endeavors. Tell us a little bit about how you approach that and what you're doing today.
Yeah, so we, you know, it started with creating a Facebook page for our firm. And, you know, I had to learn about content. You know, what is the content that audiences, or the people you're trying to reach, I should say, because we didn't have an audience at that time. You know, we were trying to reach people to create an audience. What do they want to see? You know, at my old firm, and again, I want to be clear, I love my old firm. I had the best experience there.
Sure.
But the approach that we took there was just different than what I had to do at that time as a small, very small practice. And they don't care. The people on Facebook don't care about the most recent appellate court opinion on the Boulevard Rule. They want something that's going to grab their attention when they see it. And it's not, so I had to learn, it's not necessarily so much about what my firm is doing or what we as attorneys do as it is just sort of creating content that draws people in. And that was sort of the approach we tried to take at first. And we know we got some engagement and, you know, we try and do other stuff here and there that we thought would be of interest. And of course, you know, you throw in the, hey, we want to congratulate, you know, partner Marshall Horman on his, you know, recent victory in court in front of a jury after 2 days, you know, those sorts of things. You got to put that little bit of self-marketing in there. But it wasn't until, frankly, I went to the conference last year and the CRISP conference, and I started to realize, you know, oh, you need a content calendar. You need to, you can't, because at that time it was just whenever something would pop up on legal news or we'd have something happen here in the firm, you know, we'd post something. And I try to put something up every, you know, couple days. But it wasn't a focused approach.
Yeah.
And when I sat in that conference, I listened to some of these other people talk, you know, these geniuses of marketing. And, you know, I mean, gosh, Gary Vaynerchuk was there, you know, and I got to listen to him talk and I was blown away by him. And I thought, okay, I've got to be a little more focused in this. And so I bought his book, bought another book on social media, you know, advertising and you know, creating that presence. And the thing that Gary said that really stuck with me was he said, you know, create a brand, but he said, give your stuff away for free. Give something of value every time you post something. And so we try to do that. We would do video series. We would solicit questions from folks. And, you know, might be a question about, hey, you know, does my employer have to give me FMLA? And we try to stay with, you know, try to stay in our lane, things that we were familiar with and we had practiced, you know, workers' comp related questions, personal injury questions. And we create videos and we post them and say, hey, here's a question. Here's a sort of general, generic response. And that was something that really stuck with me too, was Gary Vee's approach on just give value every time you post something. And I did see an increase in our engagement through social media, but, you know, we have a Twitter account, we have a Facebook account, we have an Instagram account, we have a LinkedIn. And I found that the Facebook and Instagram were getting the most of my attention, probably because on a personal level, I use those platforms the most as well. But I also found I was losing a ton of time managing those. And, you know that as well as I do, trying to juggle too many things. Instead of doing a lot of things, instead of doing a couple things well, I found myself doing a lot of things, you know,
okay,
maybe average. Yeah, you know, and so we actually, my partner and I very recently, within the last like 4 months, hired an outside marketing person. They've taken over all of our social media accounts. Someone I've known for, you know, about 13 years. And so she used to work as part of brand marketing and product marketing in-house for a very large craft brewery that has, you know, nationwide distribution. And she went out on her own and started this marketing thing. And we brought her on board. And first time she sat down with me with her content calendar and said, okay, here's what we're doing. I had to say to myself, I have been doing this all wrong myself. And that's why, you know, you probably have said the same thing to people when they ask you, do I need a lawyer? You say, you hire someone that knows what they're doing in that field, and you're going to get a much better result. And that's
absolutely. So let's circle back just a little bit, complete the loop. I want to make sure that our listeners understand some of what we've been talking about. So when we talk about the CRISP Summit, what we're talking about is the Game Changers Summit hosted by Mike Mogul of CRISP Video. Now, in all candor, I am a CRISP Video client, and I have been on the advisory board for the Game Changer Summit for the first couple of years of its existence. It's one of the best summits, best legal conferences that you can ever go to. No longer associated with the summit itself, but, you know, Mike has been a guest on this program multiple times, and they just do great work. And look, anytime you can get the opportunity to see and listen to somebody like Mike and Gary Vaynerchuk, and Gloria Allred, I know, was at the one that you went to, you're going to be well served to do that. When it comes to, you know, managing all these video accounts, you know, that's the biggest complaint I hear from attorneys, who they say, geez, I mean, I just don't have the time to do all of that. And so I think you're well advised to bring somebody on board to do that for you, who has a better understanding of what that entails and can lay out your content calendar. And you go over it with them to make sure that it, you know, that it's articulating the issues that are important to you and that it's your voice in the product. The other alternative is in between that step. I would suggest for our audience, if you're not ready to bring an outsider in, is look at something like Hootsuite, which is a platform that allows you to post to multiple platforms. So I can take a post and post it to, you know, Facebook, my Twitter, and my LinkedIn account. I think those are the three that I post to through Hootsuite. You may be able to do others. So it's a force multiplier. It really does help you cut down on that time that you spend. Now, the flip side of that is you're posting the same content to three different channels. So you have to be aware of that and intersperse those channels with some unique content. So it just doesn't look like it's a shotgun approach.
Right, right. And you know, it's funny you talk about Hootsuite because actually the pro we've hired, she uses that app as well. Because when I go in to look at some of the posts, it will say posted by Hootsuite.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's other applications that do similar thing. I think it's called Meet Edgar, Call Edgar, something or other. I'm sure our listeners can find that out. So let's finish up here talking about how you've managed staffing and the whole operational side of expanding your practice. You've got a couple of associates with you now and some staff. You have an office that you're maintaining. What are the challenges there and how have you addressed those?
You know, I think the biggest challenge with that is the interpersonal relationships. In my old firm, I was the personnel partner, and you know, that's always part of it, is managing people. We've been fortunate that we really do have phenomenal staff. Two of our staff members have been with my partner Marshall, and before that with his dad for over 20 years. And you know, it's sometimes what I have to be conscientious of is managing workloads. You know, you own your own business. In fact, you've done a little reading on it. You've owned several businesses. You know, you understand what it's like to have to wear all the hats in the building sometimes. And as a business owner, you understand, okay, I'm taking on this work. I got to put my nose to the grindstone and I've just got to do the work. What I failed to always comprehend was, what does that do to my staff? Am I overloading my staff because I'm not conscientious of the fact that I'm just dumping work on them, or am I giving them adequate direction on stuff? Because for some of the folks that, you know, we have working here, my areas of practice, they had never dealt with before. I mean, it was, you know, they were learning new stuff after working in the legal field for 30 some years. And I had to realize I can't just go in there and say, hey, I need you to do A, B, and C. I need to be able to give them some background on that. And so that was something I had to kind of understand was a challenge. And, you know, one of the biggest decisions we made was bringing on our first associate attorney. And to be honest, when Marshall and I sat down to talk about it, I was not on board with it initially because I'm thinking, well, I'd rather have that half of that associate salary on my side of the ledger at the end of the year in my pocket than I would paying somebody else. But, you know, we found a great candidate and we made the decision to do it. And when I look back on the best decisions we've made since opening this practice, hiring a good associate. Now we have two. We still have the first associate with us, Trevor, and then we hired another associate. So we have two phenomenal associates. And what I've learned is having good people actually makes me more productive, both time-wise and financially productive for the firm. And that was the best decision I think we've made, but it was kind of a leap of faith.
Yeah, it's such a difficult decision, and it's so counterintuitive sometimes for a lot of us to understand that you can only get so many hours out of yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a finite amount. And you know, the more you push that, the more stressed you are, and with all the things that come along with that. Sometimes taking that leap of faith and bringing on board staff, whether it's an associate or a paralegal, is what allows you to grow And it sounds counterintuitive because you're like, you kind of think, I'd rather have that money in my pocket, or we don't have enough money to hire somebody. But you find that it actually gives you the opportunity to leverage your skills and grow your firm even more.
You've hit the nail on the head. I think that has been the most eye-opening aspect of running this practice from a people standpoint, is putting good people in place actually makes your work product better, makes your firm financially better as well.
All right, so let's wrap up. Can you think of something that you did that you wish you had done differently, or that didn't work out quite as well as you had hoped, and what lesson you learned from that experience?
And I think, Neil, that I would be in very good company in saying that this pandemic has been a bit of an eye-opener on some of our lack of preparation and planning on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had looked at the technological side of things a little bit more when we first started. It's an expensive process up front. And, you know, we have a phenomenal IT person, someone that Marshall has known since grade school, I've known since high school. And he has helped us put things into place, and he's told us you need to be thinking about this. But when you start looking at those price tags, you're like, ouch, okay, well, we don't have to have that now. Mm-hmm. But I wish, you know, back in March and April, I wish we'd had some of that stuff in place. You know, just the ability to do more remote stuff, more cloud-based storage, more paperless files, you know. Yeah. Personal injury, you know, it's hard to do paperless, and I know folks do it, you know. I mean, again, I keep going back to Matt Trollinger's thing with you, but that's one thing. And the other thing too, like line of credit. We have, from the beginning of this firm, we've never taken out any loans. We've just operated off of our investments and our capital. But as we were staring down the barrel of what is this going to mean with these stay-at-home orders, the courts closing and everything, thankfully, we got a little bit ahead of it and we were able to get approved for a line of credit. But, you know, and thankfully, we haven't had to tap into it. But I would say to attorneys, as you're looking at starting a practice, or if you have a firm, think about financial viability. If tomorrow the money stops coming in, can you pay your staff? Do you have something in place where you can keep the doors open, the lights on for a period of time until things pick back up?
You know, not to beat yourself up too much, I think part of your situation is a function of your legacy. Came from a big firm, you know, mostly paper driven. Your partner came from a family-run firm with, you know, existing ways of doing business. I'm sure there was the momentum to do the traditional office environment, brick and mortar. All of those headwinds were in your face, and appropriately so, because that is your legacy. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much for not being on the cutting edge, you know, in the beginning, because, you know, that wasn't who you are. But now circumstances of where we are these days force us all to reevaluate that.
Yeah, I think a lot of, and I appreciate that, Neil. I think a lot of attorneys learned some lessons back in March when things just started to shut down and slow down significantly.
Well, just to recap here, I just want to make our audience aware of the fact that we're talking about some of the marketing. You know, I noted that you've done content marketing and relationship marketing and networking and just reputation marketing as well, just by doing good work. So I think you're hitting a lot of those points along the way. So you're to be commended for all of that. If our audience would like to touch base with you or follow up on anything that you said, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Sure, Neil. Appreciate that. I'm happy to talk to anyone, you know, any attorneys that have any questions. Email is always best. It's anichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S, at hormannichols.com, Horman's H-O-R-M-A-N. Give me a call here at the office, 301-663-8101. I had a lot of good people that were willing to talk to me, and I'm happy to pay it forward.
Perfect. Well, Andy, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. And I look forward next time I'm up there in Frederick to maybe stopping by, having a cup of coffee or an adult beverage, and keep this conversation going.
That'd be great. Neil, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, law entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.